fact, if you didn't know, right, Glendon just became a father. Congratulations!
Yeah, my boy is just born. He's about slightly over a month. It's been an amazing journey so far. If I could choose a word, it would be a privilege to be a parent. So now I'm doing the night duty where I'm taking the 12 midnight to 4 a.m., feeding him and taking care of him. And in that period of peace where he's sleeping, I alternate between just staring at his cute little face as well as doing overmark work.
I'm super excited to have you guys back on another episode of The Group Chat. Or maybe we can just take the chance to have Glendon introduce himself and then we'll go right into the podcast. Glendon, go ahead.
Sure, thanks, Gabby. Hi, everyone. I'm Glendon, a former MOE teacher. I've had experience teaching in junior colleges as well as lower and upper secondary school. So because of my history and experience, I'm really excited about today's topic, which we're going to discuss today, about preparing for the A-level examinations.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, thanks, Glendon, for that. Let's lead into the podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about 5 important tips to prepare you guys well for the A-level prelims. As you guys know, you know, exams are really right around the corner. This is, you know, the most stressful period. And leading into that, the first question is, you know, with prelims just around the corner, how should, you know, students be studying right now at this stage? Glendon?
Okay, thanks, Gabby. My first advice as a former teacher to A-level students would be to really firstly take stock for each subject, which are the topics that you are really bad at. So I think you've been through JC1, you've been through JC2, you have seen your scores, but it's very important to firstly address the topics which you are really falling behind on. And for that, if you're not very aware, what you should do is approach your teacher, ask for a consultation with your most recent test paper. For example, it could be a mid-year exam, a WA2, and have a good sit-down with your teacher to discuss, to identify which topics you are bad at. Because only after knowing what you are bad at, then you can really start planning how to revise. In terms of practice, you should be in 2 stages right now. You are either in the first category where you have done quite a lot of ample revision, your content base is really solid. At this stage, you should start moving towards practices. I would recommend, firstly, if you have, go and get a topical TYS, because I think some students like to go straight into a full paper, and when you buy a full paper or you get a full paper, after revising just one topic, you spend too much time flipping through the paper. So at the very start, I would recommend, after each topical revision, just do a topical TYS or a compilation of that topic's question, really breeze through it, and you will be very, very fast at identifying which areas you have mastered, and which areas you need some help at. If you're in the second camp where really you haven't really gotten the momentum to start your content revision, my advice is to really just hunker down and spend some time mastering the basics. And as you master the basics, after each topic, don't just plainly do rote learning. Practice some small questions. And this is where MCQs are amazing. If your subject happens to have multiple choice questions, MCQs are fast, easy, and they give you very quick feedback on whether the amount of time you have been spending to revise a certain subject has been fruitful. Yeah, so those are my 2 golden pieces of advice for the prep at this current stage. But if you're really far ahead, you have done your content revision, you're very good at topical mastery, now would be a good time to start doing prelim papers of other schools. Generally, teachers like to give prelim papers to students in this period, just before their prelims. Most schools would set their prelim questions at a difficulty slightly higher than the A-levels. That's how the game works. And after prelims, that's where most schools will start to give the students the 10-year series to do. 10-year series questions should be kept to the later stage because there are only that many 10-year series questions. Okay, so they are precious. Keep them for your final few stages. But for now, do as many prelim questions as you can. And if you don't have enough, ask your teacher for it.
Yep. I think I have one mean, this is my own personal tip. Just to share a bit more of my own personal story, when I went into JC, I was doing okay in J1, but I really, really struggled very badly in J2. I was actually like bottom 10% out in school. In large part, I was playing too much floorball, but besides that, so how did I manage to like catch up rapidly in the very tight time frame that I had? Technically, from sometime from June all the way to A levels, one of the most effective hack that I found was actually to do, instead of doing the questions, because I couldn't even do the question. So what was my alternative? Logically, what I did was that I looked at the answer sheet. So I think my advice, if I were to summarize it, work examples and looking through the solutions. I think it's very important that after you understand the content, you see how it can be tested in a form of a question. And the fact that all the working steps are there, what I did wasn't just to look at the working, but to understand the rationale behind why these steps were needed to solve a particular question. I found that to be a lot more effective than just studying content by itself. Because content itself, sure, you know your content, but if you can't apply it, it's as good as not knowing your content. So my focus was really about quickly learning the content, applying it to questions, not by doing, because I couldn't even do it, but to look through the work solutions. I think after a while, I sort of got the hang of how the questions would be set. Because if you did enough volume, you'll realize that suddenly the questions are starting to look similar. And that is a stage whereby you go like, okay, I think I have a good hang of this. And that is when I actually recommend that you try it on your own and you start the practice from there. So the shortcut that I did was to fast track myself by looking at the answer key, by looking at work examples to quickly absorb the content and the application.
Yeah, that was great, Daryl. I think right for Daryl and Glendon, they actually teach the sciences. For me, coming from arts student point of view, it actually works the same way, just that, you know, for arts, we don't really have an answer scheme. So like Daryl said, you know, the equivalent of that for the humanities would actually be to look at somebody else's model essay. And you probably want to do some highlighting, figure out like what exactly makes the essay good, and then apply that to your own essay. So in that sense, this trick, right, can work for both humanities and arts as well as the sciences. Okay, next question is, you know, prelims, right, when everybody's sitting down studying, the stress really gets to you, and there's so many subjects you need to study for. The question is, you know, what is one way in which students can set a schedule for themselves in order to study productively and make sure they cover, you know, the whole syllabus? Glendon?
Thanks for the question, Gabby. The first thing I would advise students is please don't go studying late into the night. If you have a schedule like this, it's not going to be very sustainable for the long run. Now, for the actual schedule itself, what I recommend is cover each of your subjects in the week. Okay, and each day itself, break it down to different portions. My pro tip is, generally students tend to do this. Oh, I've done 2 hours of math. I need a break. Let me go and play my phone and whatnot. This is the reality. Prelim is coming for A-levels. You don't have that much time. So as you are resting or taking a break mentally from, let's say, math, in that 1 hour break, what I advise my students to do is chop in a revision of another subject. So if I'm doing biochem physics, okay, after revising math, I need a break. In that 1 hour break away from math, I clock in a 1 hour revision of physics. So in that way, you maximize your schedule. That's the first thing. Second thing in your schedule, you should always plan that for the, let's say I've covered a topic today, tomorrow I should set aside some time to revise it again. Because there's this curve when it comes to remembering stuff. The more frequent you revisit a topic, the better it's going to be able to stay in your memory. So one of the mistakes students usually do is, oh, I studied this topic for today, I'm done. And they only revisit it like maybe 1 week later. And by then, you have probably forgotten a lot of it. So plan your schedule well, stack the subjects, let the resting time of one subject be your revision time for another subject. And when you plan your day today, always plan such that you are able to revisit what you have learned yesterday. And the hard work and the hustle will add up together after 2 to 3 weeks. That's my first general advice. Second advice is this, if you are at the tail end where you have done really very little revision, it's really not very possible to cover everything. So plan your schedule such that you are able to revise in time, including prelim as a particular assessment period. So let's say I can't cover 100% of the topics, it's fine. I try and cover 60-70%, I go for prelims. After prelims, I continue the other 40% because the end game here is A-levels. Prelims is a checkpoint. Do your best for prelims, but there's no point rushing through and doing very, very surface level revision just to hit 100% for prelims if you are really not able to. Yeah. So those are my two golden advisors for planning out your schedule. Third one, plan a schedule that is sustainable. There's no point you plan, okay, Monday I'm going to go hard, 15 hours, let's go. Next day you burn out. And then you take 2 to 3 days to recover from that burnout. So plan something that's sustainable. And my third advice would be, if you have a friend who's equally willing to hustle with you, plan a similar schedule so that you keep each other accountable. Hey bro, you done your revision today? Yes, I did. How about you? So that accountability, I've realized, tends to help the new Gen Z people be more motivated to stick to a schedule to revise. So yeah, these are my advices for people who are trying to plan a revision schedule.
Okay, just coming in here, I find this to be a very relatable example to share because recently me and my friend group, we started this running challenge. So we were planning to clock 100K in the next month. And if by ourselves, right, nobody would run. That's the reality. But because we're all in this running club online, like Nike Run app, we can see each other's score and there's sort of like a leaderboard. Now it's getting so competitive, we are way ahead of schedule. So I think what, ending on to Glendon's last point, is actually so underrated that the moment you put an activity into a social group and there's a sort of accountability and a metric for progress, you start to realize that you're a lot more motivated to take action. So you might think that, oh, this is okay, like, I kind of get it. I can get a study group, study buddy, yeah. But until you actually do it, you don't realize how effective it is. Because imagine you make a point, right? Every weekend, Saturday, we'll be at the library at 11 a.m. We'll revise till 8. We'll take our meal breaks, stuff like that. The fact that you show up there, it counts for everything already. And because your friend is there, you kind of feel like, wow, if I don't go, I'm being a very bad friend, blah, blah, blah. That's exactly the motivation you need to pull yourself out of bed to get you to that position to start studying. So holding each other accountable is so underrated, especially for those of you who are struggling to find motivation. So that's just to add on to Glendon's last point. Myself, there's actually two things I would like to shout out to all A-level students, or even if you're listening and you're in secondary school, this applies to you as well. I want to advise against mindlessly clogging revision hours. So as humans, we have this tendency that, you know, we want it to be accumulative. We want to see the numbers go up. So a lot of us, we feel very proud saying that, wow, today I clocked 12 hours. Wow, today I clocked 8 hours. You know, numerically, that sounds awesome. And we feel good about it ourselves because that's how we gauge our progress. But I need to warn students against just mindlessly clogging hours, especially if your learning is not effective. Having an effective 4 hours is better than having a mindless 8 hours. You need to understand that learning is not done in quantitative. That means it's not just you do more. You need to do more for sure, but it needs to be more and better. So whenever you do your learning, I highly suggest you are very clear about your objective for that particular, what I consider a study block. So let's say if you know that you're weak in a particular topic, make sure that it's very targeted towards addressing all the misconceptions or the gap in knowledge that you have to make that 2 hours as productive as possible. Test yourself to see if you actually learn something. Try the question again if you've gotten it wrong previously. Those are means to make sure that you're actually learning instead of just bluffing yourself because you clocked the hours. Especially if time is very tight, you have to make sure you have the discipline to go like, I cannot just blindlessly just say I study a lot, right? I stay at Starbucks for 10 hours, but did you actually learn? I think that's the scary part for a lot of us. So to make it simple, if you want to check if you truly learn, I highly recommend testing yourself, doing the practices again, or maybe trying another new paper to see progressively are you in making the improvement. If you aren't, you probably want to look through that process to see where went wrong and therefore do something different. All right, only a fool will keep doing the same thing and expect different results. So going for consultation with your tutors, your teachers, you need to find different means to absorb the same piece of information. So don't mindlessly clock hours for the sake of it. That's my first thing. Second thing, this is a bit more practical. I recommend dividing up your revision schedule, like your day, your entire day, right? You go to school, evening and at night, if you have time to study, try to block out 2 hour blocks. I find this to be very effective because 2 hours is quite optimal time to make sure that whatever you're studying is optimally absorbed without you trailing off. And 2 hours is also very sufficient time for you to do most of your practice papers. So what you want to do is to look at your entire day to see where you can portion out what I consider your protected time. It's supposed to be a time whereby all distractions aside, you put your phone aside, you're not eating food, you're not walking around, you're not using your phone. You're purely sitting there doing focused work for 2 hours. Now, on a weekday, ideally, you should have 2 study blocks, meaning 4 hours. At minimal, at least 2 hours, right? I think that's not a lot to ask for, and you probably can squeeze out that time in your schedule to do so. Now, on the weekends is where you actually have a lot more bandwidth. I recommend anywhere from 6 to 10 hours, which means 3 to 5 study blocks. Personally, I do not recommend you going beyond 5 study blocks because I think at that point in time, your brain capacity is just maxed out. Any incremental thing that you're adding on will not be absorbed as effectively. So if you think about it, if we go with the bare minimum of 3 blocks of 2 hours, I'm saying you only need 6 hours of revision a day, and that is truly not a lot, especially leading the 3 to 4 months up to A levels or O levels. You need to understand that at this very point, you are not saying that you're giving up your life or studies is everything. You just need to understand the concept of delayed gratification. You're just prioritizing your studies at this point, such that when you finish your A levels or O levels, you can truly go and enjoy your holiday. You're just swapping time. So the play time, you put it into the future, study time now. Why? Because after A levels, even if you want to study, you can't do it already. And I speak on this with real knowledge that people have happened to them before, whereby they truly regretted not studying enough for A levels and they couldn't get into the course that they want, or they have to retake A levels or to be a private candidate. That is so painful. So I think the heartfelt advice here is that if you still have the time now, put in the work. You will never regret working too hard, right? There's never, I'm over prepared for my exam. So your mentality has to be that I will take the short-term pain, but I know in the long-term, it's going to get me to where I want to be.
Yeah, it sounds like, to summarize the whole thing, both Daryl and Glenn talked about really being intentional, right? Not just with the things that you're doing now, but in the way that you study, in the blocks of time that you schedule as well. All right, with that, we will leave you guys to think and ruminate about it, and we'll move on to the commercial break.
Hi everyone, if this is your first time tuning into our podcast, welcome! Overmark is one of Singapore's fastest growing secondary and JC tuition brand. We're located all across Singapore, including locations like Kovan, Bukit Timah, and Marine Parade. If you're curious about the learning experience here at Overmark, sign up for a free trial lesson anytime. And with that, back to the podcast.
Okay, welcome back from the commercial break. Third question of the day is, what tips or advice do you have for students to manage, you know, exam stress and anxiety and to stay focused during their revision?
That's a tough one. Okay. So maybe I'll share a bit about my other background besides being a teacher. I used to be a national athlete and compete for Team Singapore at competitions like the SEA Games and World Championships. So a part of my experience in that competition is really learning how to mentally prep myself to prepare for the competition setting. And I see a lot of parallels with that to actually preparing for exams. So from that, what I've learned, these things called mental and physical routines. So I'll share a bit about mental routines first. So as a student, leading up to every exam, there are certain mental routines that you can do. And you're probably doing it, you just don't realize it. So most of us before the exam will be, okay, tomorrow's my exam. I'm going to revise my notes, lah. I'm going to do some MCQs. Those are examples of mental routines. It's just to fix them into a formalized setting such that before every single exam, you will just do that routine. So for example, you can fix a routine. The night before any exam, I will not study my notes, but what I will do is I will maybe watch a very short video podcast about a topic that I'm going to talk about. So write about, for example, if it's about biology, I watch some Khan Academy stuff just to have a very quick recap. Or it could be, I will read through my flashcards and do 10 MCQs. It could be anything, as long as you fix a particular routine. And the beauty about doing that is, if you keep doing this before every assessment, your body kind of knows, okay, I'm doing this, I'm doing the MCQ thing, tomorrow there's going to be an exam. What happens that in your mind is, your mind will slowly start to get ready, and it prevents you from getting too nervous the day of the exam. To complement mental routines, there's something called a physical routine. So I'll just share a very funny one that I had as a university student. In university, I was very afraid of not doing well. I was a bit kanchong. So I just tried all things to make myself do better. And one of the funny things that I do, according to Chinese superstition, is really believe that red is very lucky. So I will wear a red shirt, red shoes, red huge pants, okay, everything being red, red jacket, okay, and going to the exam hall, cause to me, that tells me, okay, I've tried the best possible way to draw all the luck in the universe to my side for the exams. So this example of a physical routine, where the day of the exam itself, you do a set of physical tasks to slowly shift your mind towards performing for the exam. So if you have a fixed mental routine and a fixed physical routine, by doing that, just before you sit for your paper, your mind will more or less know, okay, all is good. Previously, we have done these routines, the exam went well. Today, I'm doing that same routine, the exam will go well. And I've seen some simple routines that my students have done in A-levels. Some really cute ones would be, they will line up their stationery while waiting for the teacher to give out the paper. some person will put the calculator in a very particular way. It has to face a particular direction. So those are examples of physical routines. And when I asked my students, why do they do that? Their best simple answer was, watcher. It helps keep me calm. So those are some things. Okay, those are some things. Yeah. So that's what I would advise for people to manage your exam anxiety before the exam itself. During the exam, if you happen to really feel, oh my goodness, this is too hard, I don't know this. This is one advice I give students. Generally, a teacher who has set the exam paper will have set something that you have learned. So if you see something that you really don't know, just tell yourself, take two deep breaths and remind yourself, I probably have learned this. I'm now just a bit too overwhelmed to see that I can do it. Let's try it again after taking two deep breaths to calm yourself down. Yeah. So that's generally how I would advise someone to approach handling exam anxiety and focusing during their revision itself.
Okay, for me, I have two things to share. I think the first one is, I mean, just wanted to add on to Glendon. My one is not as like, I won't put the calculator exactly and stuff lah. But I'll make sure my stationaries, like, you know, my go-to comfort, everything that I do, my pen, everything is there lah. So that gives me a sense of preparation. So I always make it a point to pack my school bag for my exam the day before instead of panicking in the morning. So that's just my own routine of how I calm myself down. I would say that it's very important to make sure that you do not panic, because it will really throw you off. If on that day itself, you start realizing, for example, your exam, what's that called? The thingy, the entry proof is not there. You know, it just creates additional anxiety that's not needed. So that is my own preparation. I'm a very logistical guy. Now, in terms of actual tips, first one I would say is get ample sleep. Now, this is so underrated. And you and I both know that this is the truth, because we are panicking last minute. We think that, oh, we're going to clock the last minute work. You need to understand that those last extra 2 to 3 hours of stuff that you study, there's a good chance your brain doesn't register and the next day you'll forget about it anyway. Getting ample sleep is so important because it makes sure that you are sharp when you go into the exam hall when you're doing the exam. Especially for A-levels, the paper can get pretty long, and that focus that is needed for you from start to finish in order to not make too much careless mistakes and stuff like that comes from having ample rest. I know this sounds a bit like, wow, but I really need the last minute work. But I think here is just about understanding that in order to get the optimal performance on your exam day itself, rest is required. Your body, your brain needs it. And for you to actually ease yourself into a state whereby you can fall asleep easily and, you know, wake up on time, those are so underrated. And I feel like that form of preparation is something that people don't really address as much. Now, the next tip that I want to share, this is a bit more pre-exam, but I really need y'all to understand the importance of doing time practices, right? Because you need to understand, when you sit down and you do an actual paper, you're given a limited period of time to complete the paper. Now, I know some of us, we tend to do the paper a bit faster, and that's fine. But there's a lot of us that struggle with the time component. We find that, well, I'm rushing through the last part, or I'm spending too much time in the front portion, and therefore I'm lacking time in the back half. These are things that can be addressed and adjusted by optimizing your practice routine to be a time practice. So instead of just doing a prelim paper, why not just time yourself and complete it within the set duration? It also trains you to start doing things like checking your paper. It trains you to take note of how to optimize your time so that by the time you go to the exam hall, actually it is already quite, I would say, quite practiced. Meaning, you know, by when you should be moving on to the next segment. Or how long is it that, you know, if you're spending too long on a single question, you'll get that innate gut feel to move on. So I'll say it's something that throw a lot of students off is actually the time aspect, because you don't practice it enough. So make it a point to at least clock 2 to 3 time practices before you sit for your exam. You will find that it will be very life-changing in terms of how much it impacts you and your level of confidence walking into the exam hall, knowing exactly how you're going to allocate your time. At what point should you be at which part of the paper? So please, please go and do more of time practices, because it's so important.
Actually, at this juncture, right, just curious, you know, like if a student wants an environment in which they can sit down, do the mock paper, have some teachers go through with them, besides school, where else can, you know, they get this? Dara, do you want to share a little bit more about where students can do these time practices?
I think the common answer most students already know is libraries. But the thing with libraries nowadays is that you need to book slot. It gets quite crowded. It's not easy to secure a slot. And you can't really go for your lunch break and leave your bag there. There's just so much logistics. I kind of understand it makes sense for the library to empty out the spaces to users, but I recommend students actually going back to school. I feel like the school is the perfect environment for you to be taking your papers in a quiet place. In fact, if you chose a school, it's likely that your school will not be that far from your house. So in other words, school is actually the perfect place for you to go back to do extra practices. But I understand that maybe on, say, Sundays and stuff, the school is not open. This is when you can consider studying at other more, I would say, community available spots. So I myself, I stay in Yishun. So there's this space called Citi that we used to host our crash course at as well. It's a completely open space with charging spot. It's not really air conditioned, but it's very windy and good ventilation. So it's those quiet environments where you want to be doing your practices. Avoid cafes are fine, but avoid those cafes. They are very noisy. People are chattering all the time. You really need to find an optimal environment whereby it is as similar to your exam condition as possible. For those of you who take tuition with us or externally, doesn't really matter. You could even request to go to your tuition centers to study or to take all of this mock, like for you to do this time practices. At the end of the day, you need to ensure you find a spot that is optimal in the sense of the environment has minimal distraction. You're able to travel to and fro to the place quite efficiently. That means it shouldn't be more than a half an hour journey. And lastly, it's also a spot that is readily available. You do not want to go all the way down to a cafe only to find out that the seats there are not available. So plan out your routine, find the space for you to study. Now, one obvious question on your head would be, should I actually study at home? Now, my honest answer to that is that it depends. It depends if your house or your home provides the environment for you to concentrate. Now, if you realize that studying in your bedroom is a bit counterproductive, it is actually normal because we commonly associate your bedroom with a place to rest and relax. So having that study desk in your room doesn't really create that separation. Personally, I'm a big believer of like, I need to leave the house, go to somewhere else to study, because that means that my mind is already focused that I'm going to this place to get work done. While at home, later your mother come in, want eat fruits, it's just, there's a lot of distraction. There's nothing wrong on your part of your family members, but they probably just don't understand the fact that you really need this concentrated space and time. So personally, for myself, I recommend leaving the house to go somewhere to study. And my first choice is definitely school, if not library, if not public study spaces.
Yeah, thanks Daryl for that. Maybe we can share a little bit more about what Overmark is doing to provide the exam conditions for our students. Maybe Daryl, you can give us a little bit on insight about our upcoming event, you know, in September. We're actually doing some revision series, right? Maybe you can explain a bit more about our mock exams for our students.
Okay, there's actually two things we always do closer to the exam period, which is around this time. So one is a mock exam. So we typically do a mock prelim before prelim, and we actually have two mock exams before O-levels and A-levels. I think the intention is very clear. The more you sit for mock exams, the more used to it you are, the better prepared you'll be. Next, we are also having a revision event during the month of September, during September holiday itself. So if that is something that interests you, just follow our socials. I believe the updates will be coming soon, but that's another occasion for you to get very effective revision. Even though it's primarily designed for, I would say, Sec 3s and J1s, but for the J2s, feel free to join us online if you find that the topic being revised is helpful.
All right, and very last question of the day. Do I die need to clock in 8 hours of studying every day just to score A? Glendon, any thoughts?
Okay, I'll go first. I think this is a very common misconception that students have. I think the number 8 can be any hour, but I'll focus more on, it's not how much time you set to study in a day. It's really what you do in that set duration. So if you're going to tell yourself, I'm going to do 8 hours a day, but in that 8 hours, you're very unproductive. Generally, you are not going to get the grade you want. And it's quite evident in your generation, in our generation right now, where there's a lot of social media, there's a lot of distractions. So I'm maybe going to share a bit on how or what more drastic steps you might want to consider if you really want to have a very productive 8 hours. So from my experience, in university, when I had to study and revise, IG, Instagram, all these are constant distractions. So I know you're already very aware, I can just delete it. We have tried that, you know, after you delete the app, after a while, it's time for a break, I reinstall it. That really isn't that good a suggestion or a solution to your problem. But what I would suggest, if you're really very keen to have a very focused 8 hours, what I did in university was the night before, I won't charge my phone. Like legit, won't charge. So when I wake up, well, I see, oh my god, 25%. So that 25%, I will go out and study without a charger or portable battery. So you see, technically that 25%, it can last you all the way until late at night to make any emergency call to your parents. And that is the only bare thing, the most important thing that you probably need your phone to do. So when I do that, what happens? The first few days, before I study, let me check my social media a bit. That 25% runs out really quickly. And by 2 hours in, I have a dead phone, no battery. Wow, this is the perfect environment to just focus and study. So that's why I did as a drastic measure to make my revision period, 8 hours, 10 hours, really, really very productive. So my advice would be, it's not really about the hours, it's what you put into the hours. And if I can just add something else, it would be really very good if for every day when you're revising and studying, slot in 30 minutes to 1 hour to just get exercise. There's a lot of advice and research out there that really shows if you take a 1 hour or 30 minute break to just run, perspire, it really makes you more energized and it helps you focus better the next day when you're going to study. So that's really a very, very underrated thing, which most people don't do. Most kids will think, hey, the 1 hour again exercise, I can cover one more topic. But give it a try and you really see that hormonally and as well as energy-wise, it makes a great improvement to your subsequent revision sessions. So yeah, that's my advice for the 8 hour myth.
By the way, you guys might want to listen to Glendon's advice. He's a bio teacher, okay? He's got expert opinion on this. Okay, sorry. On to you, Daryl.
You know, but that's really true. Because personal experience-wise, in JC, I kept falling sick because I didn't eat well and I didn't sleep well. And most importantly, because I was so used to high levels of training and exercise, when I suddenly dropped that off my routine, I stopped all of my trainings and I stopped exercising altogether, my body really couldn't take it. And you need to understand that when you fall sick, right, it's not only that day, but probably the next day when you're recovering, you're losing so much possible time you could have spent on revising. And when you're sick and you try to study, you know it's also not effective. So I think the running aspect is so, I mean, like not even running, like you can do whatever you want, can walk even, right? Walk and watch your show also can, ma, because that clocks in the sweating and stuff. It's actually very underrated. I mean, that's a really good tip. But I mean, back to the original question on whether it needs to be 8 hours. My question is really a case of where are you in this whole race? If the race is more or less like a marathon, are you still at the start line and haven't started? Or are you somewhere along the way whereby you're near the finishing line because you have put in the work? You need to understand that you cannot compare yourself with your peer directly because you're at different phases and maybe even possibly different end goals as well. So you really need to ask yourself, where are you on this journey, right? Just ask yourself, not comparing to others. Oh, they are doing 6 hours, I'll do six. They're doing 12, I'll do 12. No, if you have done the preparation and you have put in all of the work, you don't have to do 8, maybe 4 to 6 is enough. Why? Because you're just recapping your content, you're just maybe clearing up small parts or doing extra time practices. But if you haven't even gotten started, you cannot just be working doubly, even triply as hard, might not be even enough to get you to your end point. So you need to ask yourself a question. It's not just the number, but where are you in the entire journey of your own learning? I would say the more clear you are about your goal, meaning where you want to end up or what you want to score for your O-levels or A-levels, that is going to be very important to determine how much harder you need to work. As we mentioned earlier in the podcast, nobody ever said, I regret working too hard, right? Because everybody knows that the preparation work that you do to get to the point that you want to is part of the process. There is no shortcut in life. So if you really want to get the grade to go into a certain course and stuff like that, go for it. But you need to understand that you need to make sacrifices on your end. You need to put in the work, the blood, sweat, and tears that's necessary to get to the point. So I'm not going to say 8 hours is the magic number, right? But the question is, where are you on your journey? So if you need to work even harder, go for it. And it doesn't harm to play too safe. Just study a little harder because at the end of the day, in life, you don't get much chances or even second chances. So your shot at A-levels, usually for 90% of us, that is the grade that's going to be with you to determine your university entry. I am a big believer that academics is not everything. I say that to all my students. But you need to understand that doing well academically gives you more options to allow you to choose more different paths that you choose to pursue. Nobody says you must go for a particular course or whatever, but now you have the choice too. you only realize the importance and the freedom to choose when you don't have it. But that is such a painful thing to say because we don't want you to be in that position. That's why I think having the right mentality when it comes to approaching your exams is important. I'm not going to deny that it's going to be very stressful. A-levels was probably one of the most difficult periods in my life whereby I was stressed out, I wasn't confident if I was going to do well, but you need to trust the process that the work that you put in, the hours that you clock will pay off. And you need to hold on to that belief all the way through till you finish A-levels.
Yeah, thank you, Daryl, for that. And actually, I feel like personally from a student's point of view, if all these questions, you know, were answered by the two of you at the point in time where I was taking A-levels, I might have felt a lot more confident and guided. So hopefully this really helps those of you who are preparing for your A-level prelims. We understand that it's a stressful time. If you have any unanswered questions that we didn't manage to tackle during the podcast, we will upload this on YouTube as well. So feel free to leave your comments. And with that, hope you guys like, comment, and subscribe, and we'll see you in the very next episode. Bye!